What's for dinner? Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds. Hey, that was a quick cut of the theme song. You didn't hear it, but it was a quick cut because we're portable right now. We're on location, so I'm trying to do all this manually with this little thing. Hey, welcome to the show, guys. Welcome to this. God, I think this might be episode 80, somewhere around 80. You should feel honored, my friend.
Yeah.
This is an epic show.
This is
the show that's going to, well, man, this is a show that all others will be judged by. It's 80. It's AARP. It's beyond retirement. It's living its golden years. It's what's for dinner, motherfucker. I don't know. This is what the show is. So, hey, guys, we are broadcasting this week from the World Series of Comedy in Las Vegas, everybody. This is the World Series of Comedy where the best comedians that aren't huge or really established.
Or from anywhere else in the world except
for
the United States,
the United States and Canada. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, this is actually a fun little, what would you call this? It's a competition, but...
Yeah, it's a competition, but it's kind of has a festive feel to it.
It does have a festive feel to it.
There's a competition, but I don't feel like anyone is upset that they win. I don't know. I'm performing tonight, so maybe if I lose tonight, I'll be
like... Yeah, you'll have a different opinion.
Fuck this. It's terrible.
But my guest sitting with me in my suite at the Tuscany is... like one of my favorite, and I can't believe I'm saying this, young comics to come from Florida, because I was a comic from Florida. Now when I say a young comic coming after me, it's like, oh God, I really have been in this business a while. But really, one of the best comics out of Florida recently and now living in L.A. Good buddy, Forrest Shaw, everybody.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say that. Oh, and I'm not young either. So as you're saying that, I'm like, I'm already old.
Well, yeah, but young in comedy.
Yes.
How long have you been doing comedy?
Almost 9 years.
Yeah, you're a kid.
Yeah. No, yeah. I got that. So.
No, so when we say young, like Ray Romano, do you know Ray Romano was on the Young Comedian special when he was like 35 or 36?
Okay, yeah.
And he even said, like, I'm not young anymore. I don't know why they're calling me that.
Yeah.
But I think it's with comedians, you age in experience, not an actual like age of your... of yourself.
I know, but as you get older as a person, no matter what, as soon as somebody says you're young, you're like, I'm not young. And I don't know why I don't even know why you would do it. Just let it be. But I mean, it's happening. So
I like when people say I'm young, I say thank you very much.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm older.
We don't talk about that on
we
here.
Don't talk about like okay. that shit. There could be agents listening to this.
Sorry.
Let's just say I'm old enough to vote. I'm old enough to be president. But I'm not old enough to get Social Security.
Okay. But you've done 80 podcasts. So
I've done 80 podcasts. So I'm an elderly podcaster, yeah. I guess, by this point. But yeah, we're having fun. Like, yeah, this does feel like have a definitely festive feel to it. Because there's a lot of great people walking around. It's all about, the whole reason I'm doing this, honestly, is the networking. Because just a lot of clubs and bookers that I've never met before, I've heard about. So I just said, you know, this is a good opportunity. Might cost me a couple bucks, but if I pick up some new clubs,
yeah,
totally made my money back.
That's why I'm here. I did this the first year it ever was, which was about 4 years ago, I think.
Okay, so it's still pretty new.
This is the fourth one or fifth one, I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
Or maybe, yeah, whatever. So, and at that time, you know, if you do the math, whatever, I was doing comedy 5-6 years, whatever it was, and I was just starting to leave my day job and do road work. And so I came at her specifically to get work, and I did. I didn't even move past the first round. I went over my time. They disqualified me.
Really?
Yeah, by like 30 seconds. I never do that either. I'm such an OCD person, and I just did. I don't know why. But apparently, the people that were judging the shows, all the judges liked me. They all had different, you know, comedy clubs and runs and stuff like that. So I got a lot of work. It was one of the ways I was able to quit my job, my day job. So it was beneficial. And then last couple of years, I kind of skipped it because I couldn't really afford it. I just moved to LA 3 months ago and figured, hey, I came here specifically to talk to some of the Las Vegas clubs and some of the clubs on the West Coast and people that I kind of already knew, but to kind of reinforce some of the relationships that I had digitally and then, you know, say, hey, I'm performing tonight. Come see me. I'm going to come by a couple of their clubs later tonight and If I can get one or two bookings, that's fine. I mean, like, it's a lot cheaper driving from LA to here and crashing in someone's room. That's what I did. So, but yeah, so that's it. I think that there's some people here that have not been doing comedy very long versus some people that I feel like I'm, even though I'm newer, I'm probably less new than a lot of people here. So I think it has a festive feel for people that are kind of
coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a couple years. I've noticed that too. Like, I was telling you this last night that just a lot of, somebody actually, a comic last night, we all went bowling, which is another great thing about
that was fun.
Something like this. Yeah, it's just, take these earplugs out. Yeah. I know we sound good. That doing something like this is, there's a camaraderie. There's a lot of fun. It feels like camp sometimes.
Yeah.
But we were bowling, and one of the, I guess, younger comics looks at me and goes, I know people probably ask you this already, but why are you doing this? I almost spit my beer. Just said,
what'd you say?
I said that I just wanted to meet some new bookers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe just the name of it.
Yeah.
The World Series of Comedy. And I know that Dave Williamson, who's a mutual friend, who's very funny, had done this. So I'm like, okay, this must have some legitimacy to it. You know, and apparently it's just the majority of the comics in it are newer.
Yeah.
They're a couple years in, which is great. That's great that there's this opportunity for them.
Not all. There's definitely some people that.
No, there's some. Like, there was, I'm such a dick. I don't remember the guy's name. I'd never met him before. But he was on the show, Late Show, last night. Oh, I'm not sure. Did you see the Late Show?
No.
He was an older guy, Southern. And.
Did he move on with Dave?
No.
Oh, because that was AJ Finney, and he's been around a while too, and he's very funny. So
yeah,
definitely
AJ had heard. Yeah. But this other guy, and I apologize, I can't remember his name. Older guy, Southern. I was watching. You could tell by watching his act; he's a seasoned road comic.
Mm.
I just watching him, I could tell he's got his rhythm, he's got his beats, he's got his stage presence. The material was more on the roadie side.
Mm.
You know, just like, yeah, it's funny, but it's been there, done that kind of thing. Which, from one of the judges told me, that's why they didn't really respond too well to him.
Mm.
But just like, again, going back to the thing about, there are some guys in this that do have the experience.
There's definitely, yeah. So it's a mix of that. That's just somebody that doesn't want comics that are strong to be on this. That's like rolling over and showing your stomach when you say it, like, why are you here? And it's like, well, it's... You know, what, did you just want everyone to be shitty at this? So you wanted all people to be. I've done 25 sets, so it's, you know. But, yeah, I think there's always, I always think there's value in these things. But then it always comes down to it later on in life, like money versus time. And, but it just kind of worked out for me this year where it was. So.
That's good. So you're doing well now in LA?
I like it. Yeah, I'm doing well. I've been there like 3 months. I'm getting up a lot. I'm getting into. Sorry. Some of the clubs, I'm getting, I'm there. So now, it's like, I visited LA a lot, you know, not a lot, but enough before then. And was always like, oh, hey, so you're out here now? I'm like, no. I'm like, okay. There's always that weird moment. It's like, I'm going to go, and it's like, you can still talk to me. I live here.
No,
it wasn't even like
no,
I was trying to get on a TV show. I was just like, I want to be friends. So now it's like, cool, like, I'm part of the gang. I live here, you know, so I like it. I mean, obviously the weather's great, especially coming from South Florida.
Exactly. That's one of the main reasons
I
moved out there.
The nights, like, I'm a sweater. Even when I'm in better shape, I sweat a lot.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to walk out, like, dressed for a show where you'd normally be sweating by the time you get to the car. You're like, oh, this is very pleasant, you know? Just in a,
well, summers are brutal, but there's no humidity. And that's the good thing.
Yeah, I have an AC in my place. But it's a little tiny AC.
So you got an AC.
It's a little tiny one, so it works good if it's not really hot. And if it's really hot, it's just I'm still sweating and I'm running
on
my electric bill. So.
Where do you live in L.A.?
Like near Thai Town, like adjacent to Los Feliz.
Thai Town?
There's a little area with like Thai restaurants right on Hollywood, in between Hollywood and Franklin. I live like right east of the 101.
I thought there was some like. Place in LA where you can buy neckties, just like a square block. Welcome to Thai Town. What do you want, Bolo?
It's all these Thai restaurants and foot massage places. If you want a
foot massage
for
$15,
now I think they're legitimate. Like you can't really move up from a foot to the penis. Like that's like big. Like usually,
yes,
like
you can. They're right.
I know
there.
You can, but you're just sitting in a chair. You're not like naked underneath a cover. Like
you
another
wear
way.
Some loose cargo pants.
Yeah,
just, you can talk them into it for us.
My thigh has a knot in it. If you can get it, but. Plus, it's only $15 in massages, so I don't think there's any. I don't think they're like Jack Shack places. But the
they could say, "Would you? You know, you want more toe job?
Yeah,
that cost you $20 more."
So it, if you go, I mean, this, it seems like it's, the names of the towns are kind of racist to me, but I guess Chinatown is just in the colloquialism of just America. Like, there's Chinatowns in different cities, San Francisco, New York, L.A. So it just sounds normal to you, Chinatown. But when I got to L.A., and you, especially you're driving up the 101 there, you can, it says Filipino town, which just sounds, for some reason, just sounds wrong to me. Then it says, and there's Koreatown, and then there's, and there's Thai town where I live. And it always just sounds like a little, like somebody just white came, like, yeah, Filipino town. That's really, but I guess it's right, because Chinatown's right. Chinese people are fine with it, and the Thai people seem to be fine with it. But it's just very uncreative. Like, there's they didn't have any Vills or Bergs, you know? Like,
do you know they have Jewtown?
They do?
Yeah, it's called Hollywood.
Oh.
Where they serve, where they sell bagels there. Do you like bagels?
I don't really have a bagel joke. Oh. So I should have seen that one coming. Yeah. There is an area with others on that's all kosher restaurants.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought that was what it was called, Jewtown.
I don't know.
But well, I just wish, yeah. So Thai town. Thaiville doesn't sound right, or Thai Berg.
Thai Berg.
Yeah. That Thai, sounds Thai like Berg sounds actually cool.
No. I was going to say, that sounds like a Thai Jewish comic. Yeah. Please welcome Thai Berg. Have you ever noticed when you buy pho noodles, they taste fucking awful? Hello.
I'm a terrible driver. I just couldn't even come up with the Jewish part. Sorry.
Come on, Forrest. You gotta be quick on your feet, man.
The bowling and all the crappy food I've been eating here. Steak and eggs at 4 in the morning.
Oh, that's the thing. Like, people always romanticize a comic's life a lot, you know. And there are some great aspects about being on the road and everything, but the food sucks for the most part when you're on a budget.
Yeah,
you know, because most of the time when we're on the road, people, we're making good money for the actual work we do.
Yes,
but money in general. Especially when you factor in flights if we need it, possible rental car, sometimes our own hotel on off days. So we have to eat on a smaller budget, which means McDonald's, Taco Bell.
Subway.
Subway's like the healthiest thing
that
we eat on the road, which really isn't saying that much.
And people, you always have friends who are like, oh, you're in Las Vegas? You got to go to this restaurant. It's like, yes, of course I have to go there, but I can't afford to do that. So don't send me your list of restaurants. Unless it's like sometimes you're in the South and you can go to like a good barbecue place for cheap. That's the South you can have. But I mean, most of the time you're just eating crappy chain restaurants and it's terrible. And it's just, you know, the thing about the money too is like, I guess it is good money for the amount of work we do if you just look at the actual stage time that you're on. But I mean, in reality, you know how much work goes into that, so it's not that good, you know? Like, the writing and this and the rejection all the way up to that point.
Oh, well, I'm not putting in emotional investment.
Oh,
and
okay.
I'm just talking monetary.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I won't, let's just say, random number, you work, like, as a headliner, you could work a club for Wednesday through Sunday. Like, an average week, most clubs, is one show Wednesday, one show Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's 7 shows, and you can make $1,200 and, you know, do 45 to an hour a day, 45 minutes to an hour a show. So that's up to, let's just say, 7 hours a week, you make $1,200.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, but then when you count plane tickets, which can run $300 to $400, and then you count if you have any merch, putting money in for that, and then food on the road, and gas for your car, or gas and a rental car. You know, you come back.
If you do anything besides sit in your hotel.
Sorry.
You're still recording?
Yeah. Oh, look at this. Takes a licking and keeps on recording.
80th episode will not be held back.
Yeah. Usually this is a little more stable. But yeah, so there are many factors. But again, the whole reason we do this is because we love it. I hope you love it.
I love it.
Because you kind of look at me like, I don't fucking love it.
Yeah, it's zoning out. Just had a stroke or something. But no, I love doing comedy. That's I quit my day job 3 years ago now.
What did you do before you did this?
I was a biologist, a marine biologist.
You were a marine biologist?
You never knew that?
No.
No, really? I thought you were like, you were doing like, set me up like, when, what did you do before? Like, I thought you knew.
No.
Yeah, no. I
You look like the least kind of person to be, because you think of marine biologists, you think of either like really tanned guys with like
I was tan.
But like every time I see a marine biologist like on Discovery, whatever, They're either older middle-aged guys with like thinning hair, you know, and glasses going, well, the reason the dolphin isn't quite coming up to you now is because you're wearing something shiny and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, or
they were,
like, really
were young at some point. They didn't just be like, at 60, I'm going to get into this marine biology thing.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. No. I'm not just, but because your hair's all disheveled, you have stubble all the, every time I've seen you, you've had stubble or mutton chops. When I met you, you had mutton chops. So this is before you quit your job.
Yeah.
So you were a mutton marine biologist.
Exactly.
Chuck?
Mutton the fish, mutton the chops. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 3 years ago in October, I quit my day job. I worked for Miami-Dade County's Department of Environmental Resources Management. So it was the section that I worked in was specifically geared towards working in a marine environment, and we would sample water in Biscayne Bay, which is in Miami, Florida, and the tributaries that led into it. We'd test the waters. We'd monitor the seagrass. We'd do fish surveys.
Fish surveys?
Manatees.
How many fish here are happy? Raise your fin, kind of thing?
Now,
if
you had more fish to eat, would you be happier? If sharks didn't exist. Yeah, so, and then I did a lot of work with manatee protection, manatees.
Oh,
and
that's great, man.
So, yeah, I went to school for that. I got a degree in environmental science / biology kind of thing. It was like a hybrid degree. And then I worked there for 12 years. And so I did that for a while. It was a career. I made a lot of money. Like,
yeah.
I made a lot of money. I think about it. Like, I had health insurance.
And okay, like, so what... And I know this is the cliche of all cliche questions to a comedian. What brought you into comedy? You went, this thing I've been doing for 12 years, I want to do this thing that has a much lesser chance, not much less lesser success rate than a cushy little job that I've had. What was it?
Well, I don't know. I think about that all the time. No, so it's only been 3 years because I had, you know, the first 6 years, and that first 6 years is, you know, the first two or three is just, you know, how you're doing, open mics, getting up, running around. And then eventually I started making a little bit of money, and then I started getting some road gigs, and I started not making enough money to survive yet, but I was like, oh, I can kind of do this.
Wait, before you even did the open mics, what led you to do comedy?
Oh, comedy. Oh, I just always, I've always loved comedy. I've always been obsessed with comedy and trying to be funny, but I'm always been very, I was always very sarcastic and dark and cynical, and always, and I've always would watch it and be like, I should do that, always, you know, and I'm gonna do that, and I never did. And then really the I'm telling you, the final impetus, I always say this, it sounds like it's like some sappy story, but my grandfather passed away, and then I was scanning photos of his life, 300 something photos, and he was one of these guys that you look at him and you're like, this guy really lived life. Like, my grandparents really lived life. They did let's do this. Let's go on a trip here. Let's just try this food. I've never had this. It's just like that type of thing where it's like, you know. And so then I literally made a list of, like, I better start making a list of stuff to do so I don't get old and be like, gosh, I could have done that. You know, I don't want to be that old guy. And that was one of the first things. And I signed up for an open mic, the Miami Improv. We have to bring people. That was my first show.
Mm-hmm.
Did it.
Which is when the Improv is downstairs or upstairs?
Same place it is now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably been there like 6 months. It just moved like there. Yeah. And signed up, did it, and it was not terrible, but it wasn't great, but it was kind of like,
But you were hooked.
I was pretty hooked, and then the second time I was like, I'm doing this. Like, I'm going to be doing this as much as I can now, and I ended up, by chance, I don't know if I had really good, any jokes that were decent then, but it just so happened that I linked up with other comics that I liked and that I thought were funny. Like, Al Jackson took me aside and was like, hey, I think you're funny. You want to come write with us and do something? I was like, okay. Oney Prez. These are all comics, but I'm sure people know them, but that are, you know, I mean, Al's doing great, you know. Oney's in New York. He's doing great now, too. Okay. And then we started building our little circle for that. And that's how, you know, I eventually met you through that same, like, through all those people, like, you know, in South Florida that stuck with comedy, something like that. But I had seen you perform a bunch of times for that. So anyways, then I kept doing it.
Tell me more about me.
You want me to tell you a nice story about you?
Sure, I was kidding, but sure.
This is a nice story about Flip. This is why, not that I wouldn't love you anyways, but I always have my grandmother died. Do you remember that night?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was the night before Halloween, or it was on Halloween?
Ew,
no, it was the 30th. She died on the 30th.
Okay.
She died for, and I was at the Fort Lauderdale Improv, mm-hmm. and I believe it was like Moshe Kasher was headlining, and Ricky Cruz was middling, and you came by to do a guest spot.
Yeah.
Skippy Green, maybe?
I don't remember. I remember.
I think because it was Halloween, you did Skippy Green.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they tanked.
Yes, you did not do well. I wasn't going to say that part.
This Skippy Green, because I thought it was going to be the best thing in the world, and it ate the biggest bag of shit.
But it was great because you weren't doing well, but you were like, you're just making all the sidebar comments to the audience. And I enjoyed it, but it was like.
There was a woman who, I think I opened with this. It was a woman in the front row dressed as a nun.
Yeah.
And I said something like, you know, if you're ever mean, I'm just going to call you a nunt. And it just died. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So it's going to be that kind of show.
Yeah. And I think everyone else was in costume, too. So that's kind of the thing where, that might have been it. It was like, everyone else is in costume, so they're not even thinking, like, oh, who's this guy?
Exactly.
Because if you're not in costume, then you can maybe. Anyways, in between shows, I get a call from my aunt, who doesn't even live in Miami, and she told me my grandmother had passed away. She had a heart attack and passed away. And, I freaked out. I was freaking out. I didn't even know what to do, so I just went to the manager, and I said, I gotta leave. My mom's with my grandmother, and she just died. And he said, okay. And you had just left, but they called you back.
Left. Yeah.
They called you back to MC, and you MC'd. I didn't even see you come back. They called you back to MC, whatever.
Because I remember I just left the parking structure, and I could say this on the air now. I ate an edible.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but I remember you told me that, too.
I ate an edible. I'm like, oh, this would be nice. I'll spend the rest of my day. Yeah. I'll spend the rest of my night with my brother, just being a little, stony. And then they text me, Forrest had to leave. Can you come back and host? And I was like, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So I turned back around.
And then how'd your set go on the edible?
It actually, I timed it pretty well to where the edible really didn't kick.
Were you Skippy Green or just?
I was me.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you can't. Yeah,
Skippy Green.
You weren't going to test it twice. But. No. So you do the set, whatever. The next day, I go home. The next day, I decide to do the shows. Mom's like, just go do the shows. Like, there's no reason for you not to do it. We're going to do a lot of stuff. Went there, I closed out the weekend, and then when I got paid, they told me that you found out my grandmother died, but they told me that you didn't take the money and you gave it to me, which I thought that was always a very nice gesture, and I always thought that was really sweet. So, thanks, Flip. Not that we're already friends, and I liked you, and it was like, there's nothing, but it was just a really nice, like, thoughtful thing. So I figured I'd tell all your listeners. Flip's a nice guy.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I remember that, because, one, I felt awful about your grandmother, but also, just as a comic, I'm like, that's not his fault. He shouldn't be docked. She shouldn't lose money because something like that happened.
Yeah.
So it's,
Yeah, it was just
it was one show. It wasn't like it was money that
was $50, but it wasn't like life changing. But it was just a very nice thing. So
well, thanks, man.
I've never had the format to tell you. So now on your 80th episode.
Oh, I hope God, this better be 80 now. Even if it isn't, I'm gonna save it or put it up early.
Change it. What if you already passed 80? You're gonna have to like delete one.
No, I think the one that's up now, because I have try to record a lot of these in advance. So I think I just uploaded number 77.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But no, I appreciate that, man. There was when I started a couple of years in, I was emceeing for Mark Lundholm. Mm. Yeah, I probably don't know him. A very funny comic. We were working at the old Comedy Corner in West Palm Beach, and I just remember we went out to dinner, and he paid for me, and I was like, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Yeah, just promise me that when you start headlining, you at least once a week take out one of the other comics when you can and just pay it forward." And I love that idea of, just looking out for those coming up and everything. And when you can, try to take care. And it wasn't like buying you dinner, but it was just one of those moments. So all I say to you is just pay it forward when you're a headlining.
Or when I work with someone and their grandmother dies. Can't wait for that moment to be. You sure she's not sick? All right. All right, enough talk about death. But
So you started doing the open mics and,
I started making some money. I started actually getting out of South Florida doing some gigs. And then I got to the point, and I actually did this, World Series of Comedy, right before I quit my day job. Got a lot more gigs outside of the scope of where I was. And said, hey, I had some money saved. Let's just do this. Stayed in Miami for the first couple years and worked out of there. And then started working my way saving to get to L.A.
No, let me ask you this. Just as somebody who's 9 years in, 3 years full-time, what is the biggest shock that you've found about doing comedy full-time?
Well, shock or
like something that you weren't expecting, like either a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I don't know about I have like things that scare me.
Or scared.
Scare, yeah.
Give me a scare.
Well, I mean, I had some money saved when I first stopped, you know, so the first 6 months was kind of like, oh, this isn't bad, even though I'm not making enough money, but I'm spending. But when you first really start, your income really is coming from comedy, and it's not, you have the day job and other stuff, it's scary. It's really scary. It's still scary now. Moving to LA, I just did another thing that's scary. Like, took myself out of my comfort zone again. And it's like, when I've never in my working career life have, you always have like this company that you're kind of falling back on. Like, where it's like, when I was a biologist, I'm like, well, they're going to pay me regardless. Like, I just got to show up. I could be sick. I could just like fiddle through some emails this week. I'm still going to do some work. You're still going to get paid. You're still going to have health insurance and all stuff. And when you're out on the limb on your own, it's really scary, but it also motivates you a lot. Like, yeah. I've been very motivated since I've been in LA, because LA is even scarier. Miami is like where I grew up. I had this comfort zone. I was living in the house where my grandparents used to live, like kind of like living there, like just like living in this house that I knew, had all my friends, had all my family. And now this next step to LA is just like, no one gives a shit about, like, barely my friends care about me there. And you really start to see the reality of the business is, it can be a really hard, long road, or you got to work really hard and maybe something can happen out of it. And that's what I've really noticed since I've been out there, is like the very successful comics, for the most part, work really, really hard. Everyone's like, this is just given to this person. It's like, nah, they do work hard.
Some are given.
Yeah. Well, there's some, but I think a lot of them really, you know. But
oh, yeah.
So to me, it's just just being, because you're alone in comedy always, and you're alone on the stage. And it wasn't until I left my day job that I started to feel what it's really like to be alone and on your own, because you don't have that support kind of system. And then now in LA, it's really like alone. And it's not alone like I'm in deep depression and I'm just going to curl up in a ball. I think it's like a kind of, if you're the right character, you start to push back.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
But it's definitely shocking in my opinion, but it's more like scary, but in a good way, I think. You know?
So. Yeah, it's motivating. It's the fear that motivates you. Because when you get down to it, nothing is going to come to you out of nothing. You've really got to work on it. You know, even if you work a little and something amazing happens, you still did work on it.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's like, why people don't do this.
Yeah,
like, you know, after shows, people come up to you and like, there's like these two responses that I always see, but I always know what they're feeling. The guy, I was thinking of doing something like this, but I never did, or whatever. Or the old like, I don't know how you do this, but that's still that fear of them putting themselves in your place.
Yeah,
of just being completely like, not only are you your own boss and you have to get all your own work, and you know how it is. I mean, that's why we're here. Like, why are you here, Flip? You shouldn't be here, because this is hard to get in touch with bookers and talk to people.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. And you'll see that, if these people will see that eventually. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. This is what you have to do. And then the tough part is, then after all that, you still have to go perform and be like, well, I hope this crowd of strangers likes me that I don't know. And so that's why people don't do it. And most of the time people respect it, I feel like, and say, hey, this is tough, or thanks for coming out. Not even like, this is tough. I don't need them to say this. But just like, hey, thanks for coming, like, you know, or we enjoyed it. Even if you didn't enjoy it, just thank. Because you can tell when people don't enjoy it sometimes.
Yeah.
But they still say like, hey,
good
thanks
job.
For coming
thanks
out.
Coming
thanks
out,
for coming
yeah.
to our city. You know, like that one. I'm like, well, you're welcome. I don't know. But
I don't know what you're talking about. Everybody loves my show.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm at a 50% like rate at this point, so, which I still think is good.
By the way, I meant to tell you a couple minutes ago, I thought of a great name for your first CD.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Darkastic.
Darkastic.
Like dark and sarcastic.
Yeah, yeah, that might be good. Yeah.
Darkastic.
I have to write that one down.
D-A-R-K-astic.
Yeah, castic. With a Z?
Hmm?
No, I said with a Z.
Don't ruin it.
Darkastic.
Darkastic,
might be good.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of cynical and dark, but that doesn't. Dinical. Dark chemical.
Yeah. No, but sarcastic.
Darkastic might be good.
But D-A-R-K.
Yeah.
Astic.
Sidarkastic.
Sidarkastic?
Yeah.
Sidarkastic. Like sadistic, yeah. Dark, and sarcastic?
Yeah, yeah. That might be good, too.
Sidarkastic.
Because then it's weird.
That is
even weird. Then people are like, what is that? Is that Middle Eastern?
No, it's the name of my kid. Yeah. This is Sardastic. Oh my God.
Yeah, I should probably name the my Siddharth album should be a tongue twister. Stardust.
Getting a call?
Oh yeah, it's Lisa. I'll call her back.
That's right. You put the ball and chain on hold. Well, this okay. Let's talk about that too, because you and I are both in a similar situation in our personal lives. Can we talk about this?
Sure. Yeah.
Because our listeners know I'm married to the incredibly funny and beautiful Allison Weber, and you are now dating a very funny comedian, Lisa
she's
Correa,
beautiful too.
Who's very beautiful. Yeah, I wasn't going to say that, but
she's
Jesus Christ, man, what I would do to her.
Sorry. She's going to listen to this, Flip. What was that?
Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, Lisa Correa.
Yeah, now I know for me, like, because everybody would always, like, whenever I'd hear about comics dating, it was always like, oh, couldn't work. Oh, comics are so fucked up. And, oh, my God, he's such an asshole, and blah, blah, blah. And then I met Allison. And granted, when I met Allison, she'd only done comedy twice. So I literally met her right as she started doing comedy. And I've grown. She's grown. We've grown together as comedians, and I've seen her grow immensely. And to be honest, like, I'm really comfortable dating a comic, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, I know people, some guys or girls would get jealous if you're in a couple and somebody succeeds, the other one doesn't. I look at it that she is a woman who plays guitar. I'm a male monologist. We're nothing alike comedically. Mm. So whatever she gets, she deserves on her own merit.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah. How is it? Because you guys have been together a couple of years now, right?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, I was like secretive for a while.
Because
you know, she had been divorced, you know, and her she didn't want, she had still not really broken stuff to her family in the way she wanted to. And her
to
family,
this day?
Her family, no. Her family knows me and knew me and, you know, whatever. But that all got settled. So initially, it's like, you know, but it's like right when I left, started doing comedy full time. So, but it's been great. I think, there's a lot of comics I wouldn't date. There's a lot of people I wouldn't date normally, too. It's like, you're telling me there's nobody that's a comedian that's a woman that you wouldn't date. You know what I'm saying? It's like, when people say that. I mean, guys in general are. I can see how women might say they're not going to date like a comic because, in general, we're, you know, guys, you know, comics, they're just disgusting.
Yeah, but but here's the thing, male comedians tend to be piggish, disgusting, and hoary. Whereas female comedians, not all, but some tend to be out of their fucking minds.
Yeah. There's that
so
thing.
The thing is, you get those two volatile personalities together, you're going to have chaos.
So we kind of buck those trends. And that's,
you and I, we've found one of... Because not that you and I are perfect males, but I think as far as male comedians go, we fall on the better side of male comedy. And we found women who I think definitely fall on the better side of female comedians.
And I've never been whorish, I would say. But those days...
You've never been whorish.
No. But I mean, the days when I was like a scumbag like that was when I was younger and I wasn't even doing comedy yet. So then when
you missed out.
I don't think I did.
You missed out, man.
I don't know if I did because... But that's... So I think for me, I mean, obviously the things that are... Just from a comedic standpoint, forget the relationship part, dating a comic... anytime that I said, hey, I'm going to go do an open mic on Tuesday, that's not a problem ever. There's never like, why are you going to this?
Oh, no, that's
shit. That's great. It's fun to be able to kind of like, if sometimes you're unsure about something, you're doing a showcase, you're going to do an audition, and you don't know, it's like nice if your significant other is like, you can just talk to them about it. And it's not like, well, I think blue looks good. You know, it's just like, you can get this.
Yeah.
Honest personal assessment for somebody and
somebody who actually knows you know what they're talking about.
Yeah, and then we've been able to travel together sometimes and do shows and stuff.
Oh, you guys do like the who?
No, we don't do not a lot, but we've done it. You know
who meet middles who headlines?
We've done both.
Oh, really?
It depends who books the gig. Like sometimes I'll book it and I'm headlining and she'll middle, and then there's another. I just was in Miami in July, like right when I got here. I had to go back there for a couple days when I got to LA. And she was headlining. I middled for her. So it goes both ways.
That's cool.
It doesn't have to be a pissing contest. That's the thing about being jealous about... we both have achieved different things, and we're never jealous. She does a ton of commercial stuff. Like, you know, she's always booking a lot of commercial work.
She was a catheter lady, wasn't she?
She was. Catherine lady. I'll let her, if she's ever on here, tell that story. There's a good story there. She might not even be able to tell the whole story, though, because there's legal reasons. Yeah, yeah. So she doesn't do that anymore, so I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to get any trouble, but she was.
Oh, you know what? I think she told me that story. Yeah, at least, like, the legality.
She would be able to tell you, know what the legality of what she could say and not say, but let's just say she does not a spokesperson for the catheter company anymore. But she was mocked on Talk Soup.
I remember,
as Kathy Catheter, which was great. You know, I thought that was. I remember I got a text her. She's like, "I'm on the soup." Like, most people would have that. That would be a catheter being mocked. They'd be like, "Oh crap!" You know. And she was like, "Yay!"
And I thought that I was on TMZ, and I was so excited.
Yeah, yeah.
That's people are like Facebooking me. I just saw Flip Schultz on TMZ. Holy shit!
For some reason,
I saw that as like a bad.
Yeah, because if you're a comic, who cares? If you're an actor and you're on TMZ, you're like, oh shit, shit's gonna come out. You're a comic. You're like, I'll just make this a bit if it turns out really poorly, and even if it doesn't, I don't care. I say all my shit on stage anyway. So yeah,
I was a stoner comic. I wasn't even stoned. That's how good it was.
It's been good. I mean, obviously now it's tough. She's still in South Florida, and I'm in LA, so that's a strained relationship. But she's coming out on Sunday. I'm seeing her in a couple days.
How long are you guys going to be out there?
She's going to be there for about 3 days. Then we're going to see. We're trying to, like, really, that's one of the things Roman's trying to make this work, is like trying to plan out when we're going to see each other better and stuff like that. So we're going to see each other in November a couple times. December, she's coming out for the birthday with her daughter. We're going to go to Disneyland. It's going to be fun.
I was just there 2 days ago. Our neighbors are moving, so Allison and I, it's funny, we'd been promising them for months that we're going to, because they watch our cats and everything.
Yeah.
And then they're moving, and like, this was the only day we can do it. And we're going there, and I go on just, I kind of had an idea of what it would cost.
Yeah.
But the day that we're going that morning, I just went online to see what the tickets were. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were happy to do it. You know, they're very good friends and everything. But I'm like, wow, these prices have gone up since I was a kid.
Yeah. The theme park thing, though, is they're very expensive. But then when you're there and you kind of assess what's going on, it makes sense.
It's not
I know they're making a lot of money still. But when you look at what they have as far as overhead and keeping this stuff together, it's not like people want. I don't know what people want. $20 tickets? Like, they wouldn't even
be able to pay
their electric bill. You know.
But you know how many more people would show up for $20 a ticket?
But then people wouldn't want to go because it's crowded. It's like this balance. It's one of those things they got to keep it. It's like, you know.
What if we timeshare Disneyland? Like, you buy a $20 ticket and you're allowed to go to Disneyland on these 2 days of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They still want to make money. I'm not saying they're not making a lot of money. But,
it's true. Like, we went, and we were just noticing, just like the little things you really kind of take for granted, like the plants. Like, the plants are all incredibly well kept.
Yeah.
The shrubbery is, you know, there's some, what is it called when they cut it?
Topiary.
Thank you. Like, all of that stuff all over. And then the paint, my friend was just commenting, like, do you realize, like, once a month at night, the entire park is like paint, or maybe once every 6 months.
Yeah.
The entire park is painted.
It looks awesome. Yeah, everything always looks amazing.
Because you got to imagine the sun's beating on that, and the rain and the weather and everything. Yeah. They've got to keep that up. So I understand where the money goes, but still.
Yeah, if you own a house, don't do anything for 2 months and see what happens. It'll look like shit. So imagine Disney World. Yeah, but I get it. It's like the funny thing about this is like her daughter, who's 11, found out I hadn't been to Disney World in Florida since I was, I don't know, 16. Haven't been. I've been to, like, Universal, and she was just beside herself. Like, yeah, I'm in the Disney World. Like, yes, so we have to get in the Disney World. Like, And so she told me that she was going to take me to Disney World. That was her thing. But she just turned 11. It's not like she's got tons of money. So I was like, oh, it's a lot of money. And she was like, oh, well, I'm not paying for it. You know, she's not going to pay for it. She just wants to escort me into Disney World. You guys are going to pay for it. I'm just going to walk in there with you and present Disney World to you. Like, and here is Tomorrowland, and here is...
See, I would love it if you guys get up to the ticket booth and she's just like, I got it. Yeah. It just whips out a credit card, like a Visa Platinum.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. I invented an app. Making good residuals on it.
Oh, okay.
That's my impression of her kid.
She might try that. I think that... Lisa told me another funny story about it. I'm not going to tell a lot of Lisa's story, but it's just since her daughter wanted to take her out for her birthday for dinner maybe a year ago or something like that. She wanted to go to P.F. Chang's. That's a restaurant. She brought it her, and the bill came, and I don't know, it was probably like $50 or whatever. And her daughter just looked at it and was like, I got like $10. Just kind of like, I don't know how much money it was, but she didn't have it. I was just kind of slid it back, like, guess her band. It's just cute though. That kid, you know, just, you know, when kids start to become aware of like, oh, this shit's expensive. Like I have no concept of what's going on, but yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's. I think there's something inherent. I really do think comedy's passed in the genes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I really think so because like. My family's very funny. Like, everybody in my family just has their incredibly funny quirks, and they're all very outgoing and gregarious for the most part. You know, I'm just the one that kind of honed it mm-hmm. and was able to focus it into something specific.
My mom's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just mean, like, I know a lot of comedians who have funny kids.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of comedians, like, there's some comedians that come from a lineage of
yeah.
funny people. I really do think there's something genetic with humor.
Her daughter's hilarious. And
well,
not,
you were telling me. That's
not in a... Hey, you're 11, and this is funny for an 11-year-old. No, she's funny if you're an adult. She's funnier than a lot of some people at the World Series of Comedy right now. I think she gets this. No, I haven't even watched any of the sets. But, yeah, my mom's very funny, and it's funny because she feels like I don't acknowledge it a lot of times. So I finally started doing it. Like, I listen to this podcast, Mom. I'm going to say you're funny. There was an article written about me last year about becoming – it was from an environmental magazine. It was like, used to be a biologist, now you're a comedian type thing. And I made sure they were going over all the stuff, like fact-checking. I was like, make sure you keep the thing about my mom being funny in there. And because she's very funny, and I always see people laughing at what my mom says and stuff, but it's like my mom. It's like when you're a comedian, you're sitting in the back of the room, and you're like, yeah, this is funny, but I'm not laughing at it because, okay, that was funny, that type thing. That's how I am with my mom, so she's always like, you don't think I'm funny. I'm like, no, I think you're funny. And she's like,
everyone's not laughing.
Everyone else is laughing. She doesn't... And everyone always says, oh, your mom's really funny. And so I've been trying to acknowledge it, though. But she is. My grandfather... who passed away, the one that I was telling the story about,
mm-hmm.
he was also, he wasn't funny like in a comedian sort of way, but he just had this way about him. He was always like telling the jokes. He was really good at telling the jokes. And
yeah.
He was just like a really likable, fun guy, and there would always be like this fun, funny kind of thing going on.
Yeah, same here with my grandpa. Like yeah. I said, like most people in our families are probably funny. We just found that way to focus it, to harness it, if you will. To
yeah.
harness the power of the... flex capacitor.
Yes, gigawatts.
Gigawatts.
Yeah. And you just have to do it. That's it. Because I would have just ended up not doing it if I wouldn't have gone through that scenario.
Yeah.
And I would just be like, yeah, Forrest, funny guy, whatever, you know, because...
You'd still be the funny guy at the marine biologist place.
I'd probably be in Vegas this week, and I'd come in here, and I'd be like, oh, these fucking assholes.
Look at these.
I can do this.
Hey, here's a bit I got about manatees, okay? Do you think... I don't know. If they have breasts, are they manatits? Huh?
I feel like Jim Gaffigan has all the manatee bits already, like on lock.
Really?
Well, he's got that huge thing about manatees, and
I haven't seen a Gaffigan special.
It's an old, it's a whole bit about manatees and then being guests on the Ricky Lake show, and he does this whole and how God created them. It's like a five. It's a chunk.
It's a chunk.
And he actually on his website would have a link to Hey, I'm the manatee T-shirts and mugs, and it would link to the Save the Manatee website. So he like was helping them and had
cool.
this relationship with them and stuff like that. So. Because this article I did was National Resource Defense Council's magazine called On Earth, and it's an environmental magazine. They did this piece on me, and I actually did a photo shoot underwater with a manatee and a microphone. I'm fully clothed, and
no shit.
I'll show you the picture afterwards. Yeah. I'll send it to you if you do pictures for your podcast or whatever. But
yeah, we'll link it up.
Yeah, and when I went there, we had to get a permit to shoot with the manatees in this area and stuff. And
you had to call the manatees agent.
Yeah, She only works for cabbage, not lettuce. But and at the end, they of course, oh, you're a comedian, so maybe you could come do some jokes. We have our family day, like all these kids, and like about manatees. And I was like, do you want me to write my whole act about manatees? I could try it. I do have a joke about manatees, but it's not for kids already. So it has to do with having sex with manatees and not having sex with them. But that they used to be a mistake. It's an old joke that I don't
really do much.
They used to be mistaken for mermaids, but then. It would basically be, you know, mermaids are half fish, and there's a fish scale chastity belt. The end of it basically was that fish really don't have sexual intercourse, so you'd have to ask the mermaid to deposit some eggs in the corner and go jerk off on them. It's a little classic flip.
Classic horror show.
Which, I don't really do that much anymore, but that was like, that's the only manatee joke I have, and I was imagining doing that for these kids in some open field and for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service family day. I'm jerking off on some eggs, kid.
He frightens me, mother.
Yeah. So
that always confused me how they say sailors mistook manatees for mermaids, and mermaids supposed to be these beautiful women.
Exactly.
And then you look at a manatee, like, and apparently these guys thought Winston Churchill-looking guys were beautiful, because that's what a manatee reminds me of. Either that or Burt Reynolds.
That or edibles existed back then, they just didn't talk about them, I feel like.
Edibles?
Yeah, like pot. Oh. like there was pot brownies on these ships, and they just didn't write that in the log. They were like, I thought it was just rum punch. Now, apparently it was hallucinogens on there as well. So.
She's beautiful, sir. She's beautiful. Look at her.
Yeah, you know what it was, I think, honestly, though, is because the manatees don't come up out of the water with their face like that. I mean, they'll be eating, sort of. But you will occasionally see, like, the footprint is what they call it. It's like a little circle of the water, and then you might see, like, a tail come up. And if you just saw that round paddle tail and go under, you just saw that big tail.
Yeah, okay.
You'd be like, oh, you know, look, these people, there's a lot of things that back then they thought that are wrong that we know now, okay? So it'd be easy to miss. If you just saw the tail, you'd be like, oh, man, you know.
I always wonder what are things that we see today that are, like, absolute fact? That, like, 100 years from now, they're going to go, do you believe people back then thought that mole people didn't exist and then they came out of the ground? Or
I think it's going to be less because, I mean, that's, look, when these pirates or people or whoever, you know, or these sailors were mistaking people, obviously there was no information being exchanged. It was just, if you could read what you had read, which might not be a lot because there's not a lot around to offer, you know, so you just didn't know anything. You're just like, right, so a mermaid was whatever you thought someone had told to you in your head.
Yeah, but I still think there, because, I mean, even if you go back further than that, just about, like, the world is flat, and that was a given. And even before that, the world is center of the universe and blah, blah, blah. Like, and you, as we go on, we learn things are false. And
but now it's going to be variations on things we already know. So it will be like, okay, climate change. Like, maybe the 100 years will be like, oh, it wasn't really warming up as much as they said it was. But it still was.
But now.
It was. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, now, those guys thought that was hot. Now this
is fucking hot.
But we weren't wrong, you know what I'm saying? Because that's the way science works, is there's always a level of uncertainty. It's never 100% certain. And
well, that's why.
There is a certainty principle there that is, it's not infallible, but it's different than, like, there's gnomes that live in my yard, and they steal the carrots. And they're like, no, it's probably an animal that did, like, that was probably a raccoon or something, you know.
But, a gnome raccoon?
Yeah. So back then, there was just these huge leaps of just shit exists that couldn't possibly exist. But no one has cameras. No one can counteract that argument, you know.
I know this is a very comic thing to say. That's a good bit.
Yeah,
that is a good bit.
Write that down.
Well, we have it preserved forever. So now you have to listen to this podcast. And
crap.
And you and Lisa will sit around listening to it. But there's no graceful segue for this next bit, Forrest. So I'll just say it. Now it's time for a little part of the show called The Skippy Green Show.
Uh-oh.
It's The Skippy Green Show.
Forrest Shaw, how are you?
I'm okay.
Are you feeling good?
I'm feeling okay.
Okay or good?
Okay.
I got to tell you, I know you're going up tonight. You're doing your spot.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for you.
Thanks. Do you want more than one word answer, Skippy? I'm sorry.
No. One word is fine.
Okay.
Actually, no. Answer the following question in 10 words exactly. Not 11, not 9, 10. And much like your women, I'll be doing the fingering.
Okay.
You watch my fingers, okay? Following question, 10 words exactly. You ready?
Ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
If you... could fuck... any marine wildlife, what would it be and why? 10 words.
Do you mean if or what have I fucked already?
What the fuck? Are you high? Answer the question.
That was 10 words, but I will tell you.
That was more than 10 words. That was 12, actually.
A nurse shark. If I could fuck. Are you counting again?
No.
Do you want me to explain this afterwards? Ten words.
Jesus Christ, I've never had to explain it this many fucking times.
Yeah.
10 words.
Okay.
What marine life would you fuck and why? 10 words.
I would fuck a nurse shark because they feel like humans.
Good enough. That was great.
I don't get to explain that. I thought there was going to be a follow-up.
No, that's it. That's all Skippy needs.
You don't want to explain the nurse shark? I feel like I should explain it.
You said because it feels good.
Well, that's because I needed 2 more words. I said human. It feels human.
Human.
I don't know that for sure, but I've heard that.
Yeah, so. Well, okay, well, you wanted to expound on that?
I was told, and I can never find this on the internet, though, so I don't know if it, but friends of our family were doing like a documentary in the Keys.
We're fucking sharks.
Yeah, and they were interviewing captains, and one of them they talked about that this captain was caught fucking a nurse shark because their vaginas were structurally similar to humans and it felt a certain way, and they would turn them upside down and rub their belly. So I don't know how true or not true that is, but that's the word on the street. That's the word on the ocean.
Fucking a nurse shark?
Yeah.
Why a nurse? Why not? I mean, if you're going to do it, if it's a shark.
I was always like, how'd you figure it? Like, how did you... You didn't take anatomy or physiology of sharks. Like, this one looks similar. Here's the bird.
Like, he's been fucking fish his whole life until he finally got to the nurse shark.
Just fucking sharks and fish.
Yeah. Finally!
Yeah.
Years of research.
I always tried to do a bit about it, but it's like, it's so out there that people would always just tune out and like, this isn't real. You know? And I was like, I don't know if it's real or not, but you can stay. But I imagine there's some weird self-help group for sharks. And he's like, and then he rubbed my belly. I fell asleep and then I woke up and all I knew.
It's funny, Jimmy Schubert?
Yeah.
He used to have this great bit. Like, when I first, like, was, because Jimmy started in South, well, not started, he relocated to South Florida after LA and kind of established himself there and worked out of South Florida. And he was,
I see.
Thank you. So he was like, kind of like he was like the big man living in South Florida. All the locals, like, really looked up to him. And he used to have this, in his act, he would do random bits throughout involving different animals. Like, he'd talk about how people were licking frogs to get high.
I remember that.
Yeah. And at the end of his act, he had this, it started with, like, one of the animals on Geraldo. And then every other animal within his act was also on the show, kind of calling back, like, 4 different bits he did. And one of them was about, I think it was about the frog, and he's just crying. And then they licked me, Geraldo. They were licking me. I was saying ribbit, ribbit, but they must have thought I was saying lick it, lick it.
I remember he did a lot of stuff about animals. I don't remember that one, but that's.
Oh, yeah, and then there was.
I worked with him one time, so that's, yeah.
He did this bit about how guys, or the supposedly, you know, gay guys would put gerbils up their ass, and then in the callback at the end, he goes, and the gerbil's going, what about me, Geraldo? Just wiping shit off his fur.
Yeah.
It was a really great bit.
Yeah, he's hilarious, man.
Yeah, I love Jimmy.
That was one of the first MC gigs I ever got was at the New York Comedy Club in Boca.
For Schubert?
For him. Somebody backed out. And I'm telling you, I had done 12 sets. Ever.
Really?
But you know, that place was just like, you want free Sprite? Come host. I was like, I'll just do it. And I was so terrible, and I knew I was terrible, but I mean, he still killed and did great and stuff, but I always, like, years later, I always think back about him. I was like, I should write him a letter and be like, sorry. It was New Year's Eve or New Year's Day.
Really?
Yes, that's how crappy they were. Like, we'll just roll this dude in here that's never done comedy.
For a New Year's show?
Somebody had backed out. I had done an open mic there the week before, and you know when you first start out, you'll just have that... Everything comes together, right? Just by accident, your timing and everything, just by, and I destroyed, killed. It must have looked like I had like a, and I remember the manager was like, yeah, have you hosted before? And someone told me, always lie. They told me that they're gonna. I was like, yes, I'm hosting. And he's like, he's like, you're good. We'd like to use you here. I was like, sure. And that's all he had to base it on was the set.
Just that one
of everything, like the timing, the pacing, the crowd, just my stage presence. I mean, I was just starting, but you know, right, when you're just starting, you'll hit all that and you'll be like, I'm brilliant, you know? So so it was based on that. And then I just came in and shit all over the place. And that was a tough room anyway. So
yeah, I remember years ago I was asked to feature and I hadn't featured yet. And
yeah.
You could do 25 minutes. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I feel like that's everyone's first feature. I remember that, too. That was, you can do this. Yes.
Of course.
One time I showed up to a club where I was featuring for the weekend, and I was comfortable featuring at that point. But they said, oh, you're headlining tonight, which I didn't know. I said, okay, which I already was like, scrap this together. And I sort of maybe had some time together if I could figure it, maybe get to 40 minutes. And they said, so you can do like 45 clean, right? Yes, I can do that. And just through a whole series of events, they kept shorting my time because there was a raffle and some other stuff and this fundraiser. And like, just do 25 minutes any way you want to do it. I was like, yes, back in the wheelhouse. It was just like, lie.
It's nice when that happens.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, it was great. It was fun. Yeah.
And website?
I have forestshaw.net.
That's Forrest.
EST, two R's on Forrest. But if you use one, you will still get directed there.
Oh, well, look at that.
Good like that.
Forestshaw.net, and you're on Twitter, Facebook.
Twitter is, at Forrest_Shaw.
There you go. Yeah. And good luck, Break Legs, tonight and the show. Everybody wish Forrest the best.
Oh, yeah,
and guys, you know my spiel. I'm not going to give it to you. But also, just don't forget that right now my new CD, Concierge, is available for download on iTunes and Amazon. Skippy Green CD, Lick My Balls, also iTunes and Amazon. And we will be seeing you around the country. Hopefully, I'll be in your neck of the woods now if I haven't been there before because of the bookings that I'll be getting from the World Series of Comedy. And after this little theme, wait, hold on. I stopped that real quick because I won't say any names, but somebody called and requested that I put this song on the show. So when I say goodbye, we will be listening to a little song by the Pogues that's going out to one of our friends. See you guys next time. If you're still listening, I'm trying to get this damn thing to work, so be patient. was the Pogues with Down All the Days, going out to a very special friend of the show. Bye, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show. This feels so naughty. I'm talking after the show. Now I sound creepy and scary. Bye.